From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Weekend preview at the races brought to you by Oaklawn. And we'll talk to Hammer in a little bit. And Marcus Hirsch is going to join us. And I do want to make one note. I just got a little thing that occurs to me to mention the racing office from New York sending out a note. If you're a jock agent and you are hoping, expecting, anticipating having a rider ride at Aqueduct, you've got to get the jock listed, and you've got to get that name in today, all right? So, jockey agents, talk amongst yourselves, and make sure you get your prospective winter season rider listed in at the Big A. And Marcus Hirsch joins us, and this has been a highly anticipated Marcus Hirsch visit. Good morning.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. We've been looking forward to this for days.
Yeah, it's been kind of a hectic week. I've realized that the Keeneland analysis was one other thing on my plate.
Hmm.
And it takes a lot of time. Got a lot of other stuff going on, too.
Well, and of course, it's not your only handicapping work, and you're tracking international.
Oh, God, no.
No, and including Indiana, which continues to be, I mean, they had a rough week this week with the weather, but it's been a lot of fun playing Indiana, Marcus.
Mm. Yeah, they were off turf a lot over the summer and then had a dry spell, but then it rained again and it was very sloppy.
Now, even with the off the turf the other day, yesterday I laid out the pick five on Wednesday, $1,575 with a favorite and 4 second choices.
Wow.
Yeah.
No idea.
Yeah. It's been fun. I've hit a couple, and it's worth looking at every day. And, of course, their season, what do we got, about 3 weeks left to
November 19th or something?
Yeah, right around my birthday. I know they're right... So 1-2-1. So call it 4 weeks of racing left. So probably they added those 2 days. Yeah.
Yeah.
Marcus, I want you to help everybody get a handle on these two burgeoning divisions. The mile, always is well attended, and there'll be a cross entry potential when it comes to the. The filly and mare turf types. How about a rundown of who we already know is participating?
Bike courses that right today, I'm pretty sure would be entered.
Yes, start there.
Well, Chad Brown has a bunch of them. Breeders' Cup still seems to have newspaper of record on the list, but I don't. The last time I spoke to Mr. Brown, she didn't come up. So, Raging Bull and Uni, the defending champion. We don't say champion in racing, though, because that denotes something specific. Last year's mile winner, Uni. Digital Age, the Turf Classic winner. And the 2019 British Cup mile third place finisher without parole. Let's see. Halliday, he missed the...
Yes.
The Shadwell Turf Mile with a little leg injury, like right before the race after being shipped. But he worked the other day, and trainer Todd Pletcher replied to a text inquiry saying that he was on track to run. Ivar, winner of the Chevrolet Turf Mile in impressive fashion for Paolo Lobo, he's running. Factor this, I wrote about him for Daily Racing Form in this week's Breeders' Cup Mile update. He is running in the miles. That's trainer Brad Cox, who also plans to run Beau Recall, who was a fine closing second to Uni in the First Lady. She finished fastest in that race. Mo Forza, the pride of California.
Yes.
He is running. Kamiko, the English 2000 Guineas winner from this year. He skipped the QE2 last week, or I'm sorry, well, yeah, that was last week, the 17th at Ascot because of very soft ground, and he will make his career finale in the Breeders' Cup Mile. Siskin, who won the Irish 2000 Guineas, also was announced as a probable runner this week. But if there were to be a lot of rain and the course was obviously going to be very soft, the trainer, Gear Lyon, said that it would probably, it might pass on the race. Other Circus Maximus, he just ran and ran poorly in the QE2. He's been mentioned for this race all year, so I assume he is still coming. If anything, I mean, he seems worse to me this year than last year. I don't know how much of a factor he's going to be. Let's see. I think that Sharp Samurai is not running here, but not completely sure. One Master is still listed. She ran in the sprint race on the Kipco Champion, British Champions card last week. I don't know if she's going to wheel back. She's also mentioned on this list. This horse from France, Speak of the Devil, I think could be coming for Fabrice Chappet. Casa Creed is also now listed. He comes out of the Shadwell Turf Mile. He ran okay there. I guess God Stormy is possible. I think she's maybe more likely for the turf sprint.
Yes. Yep.
And then we've got the wonderful Starship Jubilee. I have actually not read anything recently about those connections, thought process, but I know they were really torn between this race and the Filling Mare Turf. Have you heard anything, any updates on that in the last couple of days?
No, but Ron Gierkink's going to be with us at the end of the show to preview the Triple Crown try. And I was going to ask Ron if Kevin Attard had you know, shown any inclinations.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she's so versatile. She's really, I can understand why they're having a tough time deciding, because I think she suits both races, and I wouldn't rule her out of either one as good as she's gotten this year. She's a fabulous, fabulous mare. March to the Arch, I think, will probably run.
Yep. Talked to Cassie the other day.
Yeah. A Safe Voyage from England, who is like the second and a half tier miler, I think is probably coming.
Is it?
And I think it's everyone on my list.
Marcus, is it Safe Voyage or Safe Passage?
Safe Voyage, I believe.
Ooh, all right. I think I wrote it. That might be me in my list. I just may have transcribed it mentally wrong to Safe Passage, watching too much Casablanca.
It's Voyage.
It is Voyage. All right. So let me fix that. Some others that O'Brien. The only name on the list then from O'Brien could be Circus Maximus. Vatican City had been considered at one point.
Yeah, so had Lope E. Fernandez. He also ran in the sprint race last weekend. Sometimes they'll take shots, but those horses are probably not going to be competitive, in my opinion.
How about Favre with Earthlight? I thought that he was...
Earthlight's retired.
Retired, okay. No more Earthlight. Cross that off. Murtaugh with the Champs-Élysées.
Has fallen off all mentions that I've seen, so I assume she's not coming.
Very good. All right. Well, that still leaves us 2, 4, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. That's 18.
If they all go that way.
Right. Yeah. And that's without Starship Jubilee.
Yeah. So, I mean, some of these horses aren't going to get in. And like the Safe Voyage and Speak of the Devil, I mean, if they if it seemed like they weren't going to get in, it probably wouldn't come. Because you got, like, Starship Jubilee. You got three Breeders' Cup Challenge. I'm sorry. Four Breeders' Cup Challenge winners that are probably going to run. Circus Maximus, Ivar, Halliday, Raging Bull. So those are guarantees. And then five if Starship Jubilee. So that occupies a decent chunk of the race. Anyway, I don't mean, I think it's not like the very best. Mild, like when Pinatubo and Earthlight were maybe coming, and I kept hoping they might have second thoughts with Palace Pier, who was defeated as the heavy favorite in the QE2 after winning the Jacques Lemoyne in impressive fashion, but I haven't heard any rumblings in that area. But it's still, like, I mean, it's still a really good race. Uni bouncing back to form at depth. I know Moforza has a lot of supporters. I am very partial to Ivar. You know, I love the way he ran, and his races in Argentina were exceptional, too. You know, Digital Age was really good last time. I mean, he's a little bit unexposed. Cameco is an excellent horse. I think he's going to give a fine account of himself. He seems like a horse who is going to be okay, you know, going around the turns. I think he has the athleticism and the pace to get good position in a race like that. And that horse, Siskin, if the ground is right, I mean, he didn't really, he was okay in the Sussex after the Irish 2000 Guineas. His last race in France, he, for the second time in his career, he pitched a fit in the gate. He apparently does not ever do this back in training, but for the second time now, he left his race behind the starting gate. But on his day, he also is very good. An athletic, handy horse himself who might also suit a turning track like Keeneland.
You mentioned Ivar. Ivar's got that feel, Marcus, of the kind of horse that has won this race, or has certainly performed well, you know, sort of a emergent type, and you know, when everybody starts looking at, you know, when they start adding up you know, the fancy international resumes and so forth, sometimes gets shuffled, you know, down, but I know that Lobo is sky high on him in terms of talent level and forward goingness.
I think that you really hit it right there, talking about his positioning, you know, vis-a-vis both the past and how he's going to be perceived maybe going into this race. And I'm becoming very partial to the horse as a potential bet. I mean, you'll remember the last and only previous Keeneland Breeders' Cup, how Teppan ran, and she had, like Ivar, proven herself over the course in the fall. I think that Keeneland, in my experience and perception, especially in the fall and later in the year, is a very particular kind of course that some horses like and some horses don't.
Mm-hmm.
And showing that a horse showing that he or she is very capable over the surface is kind of it's one of those situations where that's almost half the battle. And this horse Ivar was like, he didn't just handle it, he excelled. But it was really interesting because he had been right on the pace in his previous starts after blinkers were added, and Lobo took blinkers off, and he reverted to the style he'd shown before he was exported to North America. But what that says to me is, you know, like, he doesn't have to fall out the back door. He can take up a stalking position, too, and maybe not be utterly compromised by having to come around too many horses in a bulky field like this is going to be.
Um, Let me mention that having just reached out to Kevin Attard, Marcus, he's going to breeze Starship Jubilee this weekend, and right now they're leaning more toward the filly and mare turf.
Okay. I mean, I kind of figured that would be the way they might go. It just made a little bit more sense to me. It's good to know.
There we go. Well, let's turn our attention from the mile, which is always a frenetic and a lot of times a terrific, one of the terrifically fruitful wagering opportunities of Breeders' Cup. There's been no shortage of big hits and big prices in the miles over the years. Let's turn to the juvenile turf, Marcus, sure. and this is more of there's a lot more mystery about particularly the international set in here. And why don't you run down what you're looking at for the two-year-old boys on the grass?
Ooh, well, yeah, I mean, I actually don't, I don't have total confirmation about a lot of things.
Sure.
Let me see what we got here. Cadillac, I think he's coming. Won well in Ireland around a turn. Ran okay in the Dewhurst last out, wasn't quite as good. He might appreciate turning and a little bit firmer ground than he got. Now, new mandate. I tried getting in touch with Ralph Beckett a couple days ago. I wasn't able to reach him. But he has long been mentioned as a likely runner after his Breeders' Cup Challenge race win in the Royal Lodge Stakes. And then they threw another Ralph Beckett horse in to the list last week, Devil Walla.
Yes,
who was 100-1 literally in the Dewhurst and ran a pretty good fourth. His first start for Beckett, there was a trainer change from Archie Watson. I guess I would be a little surprised if they both came, but maybe. Now here we have Seal Away from France, who was initially I thought was in and coming, and then I thought he was out. Somebody had mentioned, told me that he wasn't coming, but he is definitely coming. He has passed his book for October 30th, and he is a very interesting horse indeed, especially if it's wet, because his last race he was exceptional in the Prix Jean-Luc Lagardère and the Arc undercard, which is run over heavy ground, and I think he won by 7 lengths or something. He ran very fast for the conditions. It was a tremendous performance. And I know the trainer, Frederick Rossi, didn't put it all down to the ground. He just thought the horse was ridden more aggressively and forwardly and has been improving. So he's very interesting. And he is supposedly on track to come. Battleground for Aidan O'Brien.
Yes.
He was specific about him coming. I think he tossed aside all the other potential runners. He may be his only one. He sometimes runs too. I believe he won the 2015 Keeneland Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf with Hit It A Bomb, who has a much different profile than this horse. Hit It A Bomb had run on all-weather surfaces and was not, a major or potentially major European two-year-old turf horse. But this horse, the first foaled race from Found, who won the Breeders' Cup Turf at Keeneland in 2015, he is good, very good. It looks like a super live contender in this race to me. His last race was quite a while back, the Vintage Stakes at Sussex, which he won impressively. He looked very relaxed. He was a professional racehorse in that race. Showed an excellent turn of foot when just nudged along to get into contention, and then had to run pretty hard, which is good for a young horse, before drawing away late to win. With plenty to spare, I think he's going to be a major player and probably will be athletic enough to cope with the turns. He went around gentler turns at Goodwood last time and looks to have plenty of talent. Go Atletico. I believe he is running. He was second in his most recent race in France has a solid resume, hasn't delivered a performance as nearly as strong as Sealaway's best race. The Learjet has long been headed this direction. He's coming out of sprint races. He's never been beyond six furlongs. His last race was the Middle Park Stakes. I think he'd be quite questionable to stay. But the shorter stretch here than in a lot of the European racehorses could suit him. Breeders' Cup still has one ruler on the list who had long been mentioned as a runner, but he has entered to run tomorrow at Doncaster in the Vertem Futurity for Godolphin and Charlie Appleby. I suppose a quick two-week turnaround is not out of the question, but I mean, I kind of have a sense that maybe they would just run in that race and they would call it a campaign. I mean, there have been so many defections, well, two prominent ones, Pinatubo and Gaia, for Godolphin and Appleby. I wonder if they're sending anything. I haven't looked carefully at all the other possibilities, but maybe they're just not coming this year. Anyway, that's the European that I know of group.
How about from Wesley's phalanx of potential runners? I've got as many as four or five.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, there is some sprint options like Outdoor, but where's he stand?
No, Outdoor, I think, is running. I'm almost certain he's running.
In the mile?
In the juvenile turf, the two-turn race, yeah. Also, I think Into the Sunrise.
Yep.
The other ones, I would be skeptical that they would get in and or even be pointed this way. But maybe. I mean, there are some horses going to get excluded from this race. The American horses, Kretzky the Great, summer winner, and a second one from Cassie.
Dolder Grand.
Yeah, Dolder Grand. Mutasa Beck, obviously, he worked back. He's on course. Got a great setup, but ran really well, winning the Bourbon. Also the runner-up in that race for Brad Cox of Barta. He'll be running. The top two from the Pilgrim, Fire at Will, who got a super easy lead and made the most of it and won that race. But then the horse, the Chad Brown horse, Public Sector, who was totally disadvantaged by the pace and finished well. Let's see. You know, there's a couple California horses who don't look nearly fast enough to me. I mean, it's, you know, Catman, another maker who won at Pimlico last time on a very soft course. It can be done. Who Greg Sacco, he joined the fray this past week. But I think we're talking about marginal players at this point. I mean, I'll be surprised Battleground is definitely a contender. Sealaway is very interesting. I think Cadillac is a possibility. And Mutasa Beck, I mean, those to me are the principals in this race.
A couple of other names. I saw where Michael Ann Ewing was considering Barrister Tom.
Yeah, I saw that too.
All right, so that's
the Arlington Flash. He already won a big race at Kentucky Downs. So not only did he win, he was one of the only horses to run well coming up the inside that day. But he didn't distinguish himself subsequently, and I just don't think that he's of this class personally.
You know, I had two other Euros.
Hit me.
Law of Indices. Condo.
Oh, yeah, Laws of Indices. That, off the list, as far as I know. I know he'd been mentioned, but I'm not seeing them in the most recent, listing of probables or possibles. Who is the other one?
Well, the other one is important because for those of us that are Depeche fans, Depeche Mode, Policy of Truth.
He's entered at Saint-Cloud tomorrow.
Okay.
I can't remember if he's in, I think he's in the mile race.
Okay.
The Grand Criterium. There's the mile,
yes,
and then the Criterium de Saint-Cloud over a mile and a quarter. The latter is the stronger of the two races, from what I could see. But again, I mean, like with one ruler, you couldn't say that they wouldn't come back in 2 weeks. That's not completely out of the question. And I know that horse, had been on the Breeders' Cup list for several weeks now. So we'll see.
So we'll wait. We'll cross that off then. And you mentioned the West Coast. Where's Mandela with Quezon?
Yeah, I think he intends to run.
How about that? Well, now we're up to like 22.
I know. I mean, like I said, there are going to be some exclusions. And you got five Breeders' Cup Challenge winners who were expected to be entered. So that's going to take up a big part of the field.
There's also, from the West Coast, there's Ibico. I think Miller, he wants to run, right?
Yeah. He might be one that struggles to get in.
And Baffert has got Tarantino.
Yeah, same deal. I mean, they're just, you know, to be fair, historically, the two-year-old, the horses coming out of the California races are the tend to be the weak link in this race when they do participate. And I don't think that it looks like an exception this year.
Well, and for those that, given the mention of the challenge sequence, these are the challenge winners were Gretzky the Great, Mutasabek,
Cadillac, New Mandate,
yeah, and Sealaway.
Sealaway.
Yeah,
correct.
Those are the five that would be granted automatic. Two more that are hidden here, Credit River and O'Brien, that had military style potentially for a while. But I think I saw where he had declared military style and another one of his 2-year-olds.
Yeah, I mean, the one that I know of right now for him is Battleground. But, I mean, to be fair, he does, he has been known to make last-minute decisions. So
yes,
you kind of got to wait and see who gets on the plane with Bally Doyle.
Well, you obviously have got as daunting a group to trek, Steve Anderson doing the Juvenile Fillies turf. We talked to him the other day. Nicole Russo will join us early next week, Monday or Tuesday, with the Juvenile Turf Sprint.
Yeah.
And
soon we won't have to guess. You know, we'll have
yeah. Well,
your entries will be out before too long, and that will help narrow the field.
Well, people are and people are already, you know, they're getting familiar. It's well worth spending time against, you know, against these lists and you know, just having an understanding of who might, you know, who should be on hand.
Agreed. I mean, it's a lot of horses. It's an overwhelming amount. The earlier
yes.
you start, you can get the better. Just to get a sense of the form. You don't have to make any final decisions or opinions, nor should you, but you can at least, if you get the rough shape of things, and I know Daily Racing Form will be putting out the Breeders' Cup Advance as soon as possible, and it's worth digging into.
Marcus, before we go, you got a, I saw where you put together some of the New York bred showcase races as game plan ideas. You got an opinion or two you want to throw at us?
Well, I did like those races kind of out of the blue when I got around to that part of my job. I do really like Bankit in the Empire Classic. And he's 6-1 on the line. I think that's probably roughly about it. I feel very confident that they've been pointed to this for quite some time, and have used the last couple shorter races as just a bridge to it. I think he's set up to run a big race, I liked T Loves to Fight in the Hudson. I feel the same way about him as with Bankit, that they've circled the races they wanted to hit. He did really well in the Morrissey, in his after just getting a couple leg stretchers to begin this campaign, and I feel like Orlando Noda has this horse set up again to run a top race. I think he's well drawn on the outside. 6.5 at Belmont is a good trip for him. And then I took a little shot in the Ticonderoga with Short Pour, who is 10-1 on the line, and I think will be every bit of that. She had two terrible trips after a very promising comeback start, her first race of the year, where she demonstrated she'd improve from 8-3 to 4. She also didn't have a great trip last time when she was shuffled back early, had to make an early wide move, and finished very nicely under minimal encouragement to win a New York Red 2. Other than I think that she's the horse who could keep the favorite honest or maybe even lead early if she's aggressively ridden, and it's a short field. If the pace is modest and she takes a step forward, I think she could be right there at a long price.
Nice. Nice. And since Keeneland closes out, anything from the last couple of days at Keeneland as the lead cap?
Well, I mean, my history this meet has been like great performances during the week and then just complete crap on Saturday. I'm hoping to end that. I'm sure all your listeners are aware that like all but one of the turf races have Yes. already been taken off in the last couple days. But there is a I get these cards mixed up. Oh yeah, there's the turf race that stays on, I believe race 9, which is kind of just like there was the QE2 is grade A, and then the Valley View is grade B, and then this allowance race is just like right below the Valley View. And you have a horse that could have run in the Valley View in good spirits who I think is going to get loose on the lead. I made her the best bet of the day in that race. Like her quite a bit. I thought the 10th was one of the more loaded-looking two-year-old maiden races of the meet. I like Mandaloon in there, but he's not going to be much of a price. Really betting short price first-time starters is a road to ruin, in my opinion. Any other prices I had here? I don't think really. I mean, it's continuing a trend. I mean, this $150,000 maiden claimer, yeah. 2-year-old maiden claimer, they open for fillies today, and the colts are tomorrow. That's a ridiculous race. I'd like this horse Wellman a little, who was at Indiana Grand first out and ran a very live race. There are not supposed to be so many horses with impressive work patterns that are running for any kind of claiming tag first out. The 5th is a big trap race with a favorite that I think might lose. 4th is coming off. No, I don't have any. I mean, in good spirits, I made her the best bet in great part because I didn't love anybody else at any kind of a price.
Well, and before we go, I'll reiterate, as we did with Marty, and as I mentioned the other day with nobody, I think maybe with Steve Anderson might have been on the line with me, and I had to absolutely laud the crazy situation with you and Kenny and Marty, the three of you offering a best bet in sequential races, and all three best bets win $77 for those that hooked up the best bets.
Yeah, I'm glad Marty pointed it out because I never would have known. But yeah, I mean, all these racing form handicappers have been doing this a long time, and it's interesting. I know everyone has a different approach. It's not just about picking the winner on top either. I mean, a guy like Marty knows these horses in Kentucky really well and has a great sense of like where form is going. Kenny Peck is like, he has more bombers than anybody I see making public selections. He comes up with some long-priced horses on a regular basis that can really make a pick whatever for you. And all these people, their opinions are worth noting. That one worked out really well. You know, that strange, that bizarre sequence of three best bets in a row, but I mean, I urge people to, like, if you're handicapping a card, at least check out the opinions of these racing form handicappers because they know the circuits and the horses and the sport inside and out, and what they think is probably worth including in your thoughts.
Well, and you know, one thing I have not had a chance to do, and I've reached out to Beer a couple of different times, Mike Beer. I would love to talk more about the betting strategy product that you know is being offered too, because right. that you know that's that's an innovation that you know really goes a long way to help people who you know do well enough identifying contenders and then struggle with how to. You know, how to utilize that and build their tickets. And, you know, we say it so often, you know, the handicapping equation is really, I mean, some people will tell you that it's less than 50% of the equation. And that if you don't, you know, if you don't bet it properly, both, you know, denomination and, you know, whether it's in race or, you know, multi-race, you know, that part of it, is the thing that most players, you know, particularly casual players, struggle with the most. So the betting, you know, the betting strategy concept was a very savvy, you know, new item in the DRF universe.
Yeah, that's on Saturdays, and it's the picks are available Thursday night, and then the analysis and plays come out Friday sometime, and that started at Saratoga. Some people are going solo, and then David Aragona and Mike, I think, have been working together. I assume yes. they still are in New York. And even more than just like, I mean, I don't, my thought is that I don't expect people to just necessarily copy a bet that I propose or that anyone proposes. A lot, I mean, people want to think on their own and come up with their own ideas. But I think one area where this product is really good is not just seeing the races in terms of, you know, X, Y, and Z, I think, are going to run 1, 2, and 3. But how many contenders are there? Is this a race where you feel like there are two standouts, or is it a race where you have to acknowledge that, yeah, I'm tasked to make 3 top picks, but I think 6 horses could win? And then where does it fit in the sequence of races around it, and how should you weigh your opinions in that race? I mean, people want to separate the betting and the handicapping, and that's fine and fair to some extent, but it's really all part of the same cloth. And what I think you learn over time is to try to weave your handicapping opinions into a betting strategy just, you know, organically, where you're not just thinking, oh, I'm trying to pick a winner, but in what way do I see my handicapping working towards developing tickets, be they in a single race or over a series of races? And I agree. I think that this new product from the Racing Form can probably be helpful to a lot of people in doing that.
Now, we enjoy that, you know, the strategy portion. And you know, for instance, when it comes to Breeders' Cup, one thing that we always reiterate was something I remember doing. I remember it came up at Churchill, I mean, ages ago, and I asked a sequence of visitors what their betting strategy is on, particularly on Cup Day. And Cup Days, as it's turned out, and one of the really useful ideas ended up Kenny Kirchner talked about the reverse tri-key, and I had never heard it. You know, presented. I mean, I understood immediately what the concept was, but I had never heard it called a reverse tri-key. And he said, I will find a late running long shot, 25-30 to 1, that is going to clunk up for third, and I will go 5 by 4 by 1 in trifectas. And this may have even predated 50-cent tries. Now, with 50-cent tries, you can approach it the same way you approach a multi-race sequence, where you could take the really obvious 1-2 contenders and press. And when Kenny said that, it was sort of a revelation. And it's funny, Marcus, because I was somebody that very frequently would back wheel in exactas. And so, why it never occurred to me to think the same way about tries.
Yeah.
And ever since then, particularly for Breeders' Cup, you go through the charts and go find how many monster prices run third and fourth, and then you look at the obvious horses that were one and two, and you see these bulbous prices. I'm not a super player, but it really opened my eyes, and so we've talked about it for years, every Breeders' Cup. But that's part of the betting strategy approach and thinking of ways to apply. And that's why it irks me when people say, oh, I'm not going to bet that race, the favorites, I you can't make any money. That's not true.
Well, especially in Breeders' Cup races or any big field. I mean, if it's a six horse field, I agree. If you get the 20-1 to run third in a six horse field and the favorite wins, you're not going to make any money. But when you get large enough field size and enough stuff going on underneath that, you absolutely can leverage a short price into a good payoff.
We will check in with Marcus as we get closer toward Breeders' Cup. I didn't ask Marty what's the staffing plan. Is it etched yet? Who's going to be on hand for Cup?
Well, I mean, we already have two people there, and Marty and Nicole.
Yeah,
they'll be participants. I am going to be in Chicago. I think they're kind of strictly limiting the number of credentials that are issued. Also, I think that stable access is going to be limited too. So I don't know beyond the two people who are already there who's going to wind up there. Well, I think, of course, Mike Welsh will be there to do clock.
He's clocking. Yep, that's right.
Yeah, that's kind of essential. But I don't know the plan beyond that. But I know that we will have wall-to-wall coverage. We've already started on a few weeks ago with our weekly top 10 lists, and the Breeders' Cup Advanced Edition will be out with a lot of information even beyond just the pre-entered horses, and it's only going to get more intense from there. I think that we'll be generating pretty much the same amount of material regardless of the number of boots on the ground.
Well, and that process and that approach certainly was established through the Triple Crown season, when with everybody pitching in even remotely, and you couldn't even you wouldn't have been able to tell the difference between the spot reporting and every
right.
and the horsemen are a big part of that too. They understand that everybody's the pressure that everybody's got under these conditions.
Yeah. I'm going to miss it. I love watching the horses train. I mean, I end up running around like crazy in the mornings, but I mean, you've seen me out there. I try to look at as many horses as I can. And that's just because I mean, for two reasons. One, I think it's like when you're there and you have the opportunity to see how the horses are going, it's really helpful. And two, it's just fun to see all these wonderful racehorses go about their business. So I'm hoping that they have a great video presentation. So for all of us not at the track, which is almost everybody this year, we get to see as much of the training as we can. I keep harping on this. It's one of the great recent advances in handicapping, in my opinion, is the greater accessibility of training videos. It makes a huge difference to me. It's been tough this year with COVID-19. That's kind of cut down a lot on what we had available a few months ago, which is disappointing, but I would love to see that get ramped up to the greatest extent possible, and I hope that people who are in a position to generate that kind of video content are aware of how amazingly helpful it is and what kind of boost that can give to people's confidence in knowing what they're getting into when they gamble.
No doubt, and I've got every confidence. G.D. Hieronymus, of course, at Keeneland, the head of the video department, and every likelihood that they'll have plenty for us Marcus, this was tremendous. I really appreciate the comprehensive look, and we'll check in as we get closer.
No problem. Yep, thanks a lot, Steve. Have a good one.
You too. Great weekend. DRF Hirsch, everybody. Marcus Hirsch will stay right here because standing by is James Scully. And speaking of which, and speaking of video presentation, just hearing from Clocker John, John Nichols, CD Churchill Downs filmed all those works today, and they will be mounted later on, I imagine, at the Churchill website and probably through Twin Spires as well, through the website portal. And James Scully, perfect timing, as Clocker John provides.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me on. I know it had to be a little bit of a tough night for you last night watching your Eagles struggle, but they came through in the end for you, got a much-needed win. That division looks like it's there for them, but they got to take it, and it's an ugly NFC least division this year. A big game, though, for your Eagles next week. You get the Cowboys at home. That'll go a long way telling us which is the better team between those two.
We stayed up, and a lot of times I'll run the tape, and if I fade away, because I'm an early riser, so it's not all that easy to stay with it. But last night I did it, and it's funny. There's games historically. There's games you're watching, and you say to yourself, they're going to win this game, and that I even when it ticked under 5 minutes, I said to myself, they're going to win this game, and it was just amazing. And when they scored the first one, when Greg Ward scored the first touchdown, I was completely convinced. The Giants certainly accommodated. I mean, that drop pass
that's incredible,
just unbelievable. And when that happened, I said, all right, they're going to go right down and score, and they're fun.
I felt pretty good when the Giants dropped that pass, and then when that Holtzman caught that long pass down like around the 10, yeah. I was just like, hey, it's just crazy. It's just like Carson Wentz. I mean, he's great at bringing them back when they're down like that.
Yeah, well, it's two touchdowns in 4 minutes and change, and some of my Eagle fan, texting pals, they had given up. But I did not, and I was rewarded. It's nice. Listen, I don't panic. I had every confidence that, and I still do. I mean, they're going to get guys back, and I love how, these completely anonymous players keep, guys. I've got a Philadelphia Inquirer subscription, and there's guys every week who's I see on the back of the jersey, and I'm like, oh, who is this? Just crazy.
That Travis Fulgham, that wide receiver.
Well, that's an amazing story. That's an unbelievable story.
Yeah.
Incredible story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, look forward to talking some races. We got the final leg of the Canadian Triple Crown. I think that given the calendar, the way it shapes up this weekend, they should aim for this weekend every year to run the Breeders' Stakes. Gets a little bit of the spotlight and got a horse, Mighty Heart, going for the sweep. Really came out of nowhere in its essence, Steve. His first, he broke his maiden in July, Mighty Heart did, ran third in an allowance race, and he was 13-1 when he won the Queen's Plate, was odds on last time in the Prince of Wales, but, he is going a mile and a half. It's going to be, really like 1-5 or 2-5, perhaps, even in a big field there. He's by Dromedy, so I immediately was looking up Dromedy when he came along, and he was a mile and a half graded turf stakes winner, but before his first crop got to the races, the people that had him sold him to Saudi Arabia. So he's a little bit of the same boat as Daredevil when their first crop, they both sires had important race winners. Daredevil's going to have the champion three-year-old filly, and Dromedy might have the horse of the year in Canada, and both horses were gone before their offspring even had a chance to do anything on the track.
Now, we'll talk to Ron Gierkink in a little bit about the breeders and the Triple Crown try. And
I do have a long shot in there, though, Dave.
Muskoka
Giant for Mark sure. Cassie. Sure. Came back this summer, broke his maiden the second. He ran in a stake last year, didn't win. Ran in broke his maiden the second time out this summer. I thought he looked really good that day. He ran him at a mile and a 16th against older horses on the DePetta, ran a solid fourth there. And last time on that Prince of Wales, he really made a nice mental move into contention, I thought. Really just sort of spun his wheels down the stretch at Fort Erie because he's a turf horse. But those last couple races provide some, you know, seasoning and fitness. And he's a horse with a lot of upside. His dam and second dam were both, like, stakes placed at like, mile and a quarter, mile and a half turf races. And he gets Justin Stein. Justin Stein and Rafael Hernandez are embroiled in a battle down to the wire. I think it's 103 to 102 going into today for the leading jockey title. So Muskoka Giant's a good long shot, horse with a lot of upside. He's a little intriguing to me, 20 to 1 on the morning line.
Excellent. All right. There's an option. I'm glad you touched on it. Let's talk about the Keeneland closing waning cards today and tomorrow. And, of course, only one turf race both days. Then things shift gears to Churchill on Sunday with the Stars of Tomorrow. How about some plays for the weekend?
All right, I'll start at Keeneland on tomorrow on Saturday. Really just sort of go over the late pick three with you, Steve. Race number eight, the late pick four, race seven is going to be off the turf like Marty McGee talked about earlier, but the feature, race nine, will be on. Race eight is a maiden special weight for two-year-olds at a mile and a 16th. The morning line favorite in there at number four, Mungkod, is 9-5 on the morning line. Hopped at the start last time, ran eighth at 9-5 odds. But I really wasn't that impressed with his first effort when he ran fourth at Saratoga at 5-1 for Pletcher. We have a horse that's the clear favorite in here. He's run twice. He's unplaced in both races, has lost them by a combined 18 lengths. He could perhaps rebound. I'm sure, you know, like I said, he's been bet in both races. So, you know, shows a good work tab. But I'm willing to try to beat him. I like number six, AC Expressway. He's one of two in this field for Norm Cassie. Norm Cassie, two wins, six top three finishes from eight starts this meet at Keeneland. His horses are running. AC Expressway in his debut at Churchill Downs on September 24th just walked out of the gate, in that field. I thought he sort of had a little bit of a tough trip in traffic down the backstretch, but he made a really nice run nearing the end of the far turn, end of the stretch. Kept plugging away all the way to the wire, even though he got a little tired late. He's eligible to improve big time on that race. Shows a sharp 5-furlong work and 4-furlong work at Keeneland since then. And Joe Talamo stays with him. So 10-1, AC Expressway is the long shot I like in the eighth race tomorrow.
Nice, Cassie and Talamo. How about the Philly Allowance?
Yeah, the Philly Allowance, another dynamite race. Number two, In Good Spirits. It looks like she's getting some class relief here. She's won over the course. But I really didn't like the way she just sort of spit the bit quickly last time in that Edgewood. Al Stahl, I love Al Stahl, but he's got nine starts. He's got no wins, no seconds for nine starts. So I just sort of look at it where maybe he's like gearing his stable up for Churchill. This filly could be a little vulnerable in this spot. She's a morning line favorite. I like number three, Ask Bailey, for Michael Maker. This three-year-old filly's by Runaway and Hyde. She's a true miler. This is a one-mile allowance race. She broke her maiden. I mean, she came back this year in a stake race at Canterbury in mid-July, won that race going away by nearly five lengths, came back in the Indiana Grand on yielding turf and just never fired at all, was dead last early, was too far back, made up a little ground in the stretch to split the field. But last time in that dueling grounds, Oak Steve, asked Bailey went a mile and a 5/16th, which is too far for her. She ran into perhaps the ultimate key race with the winner of that race and the runner-up coming back to run 1-2 in the Queen Elizabeth in reverse order. Lucky Money, who was third, won a salty allowance race at Keeneland earlier this meet. And Ask Bailey really made a good run into contention, into mid-stretch. She kept got a little bit tired late, but similar, you know, but like I was saying before, she kept, like, plugging away. She's going to improve off that race, cutting back. I'm going to lean upon her in some multi-race bets. I really like Ask Bailey tomorrow in race 9 at Keeneland.
Nice, the three, Maker and Gaffleone. And then in that's a tough way to end the sequence, boy, with a fairly blind two-year-old maiden group with mostly first-time starters, 8 of the 11 making debuts.
Yes, for sure. And this is a race where, number 7 is going to take Mandaloon. It's going to take a lot of action in here, obviously, for Brad Cox. Into Mischief Cold appears to be training well. So's number 11, Macron, a frosted colt for Steve Asmussen, appears to be training well. It's incredible. Both of their pedigree, Steve, are slanted towards turf. This Macron's out of a dam that's like a half-sister to Egg Drop. The seven-horse Mandalons, all like long-distance female runners. If those two horses get beat tomorrow at short odds, they're going to probably be running in grass in their next race. I like number 6, Wire to Wire, in there. Devil's Fire, a 2-year-old colt for Eric Heitzman, shipping in from Louisiana Downs. He got bet down to favoritism in his first race, set the pace on a sloppy track, wound up finishing a clear second, got beat in the slot that day. But that race was a good, good debut to build upon. I think he's got a shot to get clear from the gate here with Robbie Alvarado. He's 10-1 on the morning line. I mean, I'll use the other two. Obviously, they're training well, Mandaloon and Macron. But I'm going to bet Devil's Fire to win in the finale tomorrow, Steve.
Excellent. The late pick 3 action at Keeneland to close out the meet. What else you got?
I got today at Keeneland. We have and just looking at in race number 8 today, Keeneland, I thought that number 7 and Speak was really well spotted in there. I think a couple of these horses that are going to be short prices, especially number 6 Market Analysis, is extremely vulnerable. Backshot as well. He's going to take a lot of money. I like him better than Market Analysis, but I think they're both perhaps a little vulnerable in there. And I like number 7 and Seek for Dale Romans in there. In the feature, I didn't. That's a pretty wide open race. Race 9. I didn't have the strongest opinion in there, but I did give number 5, My Gal Betty, a little bit of a slight edge in there. That's going to be a pretty contentious race this afternoon. And then, and I'll mention in the finale. I don't know if you've been talking about this inside post at 6 furlongs at Keeneland on your show, but it's been just terrible. It's winless from 30 starts this meet. The rail post at 6 furlongs. Post 1, 2, and 3 at 6 furlongs are not good. It's tough to win from the inside. In the finale today at Keeneland, the 5-2 favorite is drawn in post 1. And I'm going to try to beat her for sure, Devilish Wit. Obviously, Mucho Macho Mama is the horse to beat. She'll be on all my tickets for Dallas Stewart. Ran into Midnight Ballerina, who's the horse to beat Churchill Sunday in the Rags to Riches. Real promising filly for Bill Mott. That was a really tough race. Little Stitches came right back to win for Amos and Keelan earlier in the meet. But the other horse I'll use in there is Hindsight. Now, I know Vicky Oliver's not the best with first starters. I looked her up. She's got 5 wins this year with first-time starters. But this Hindsight shows some really fast work, Steve. They paid $150,000. The dam is a half-sister to a Grade 1 sprint winner. Bred to run early, fast works, Rafael Bayerano. Hindsight might not be a bad one to add in there to price if you're playing multi-race bets today, today at Keeneland.
Well, and you look at that workout 3 back at Keeneland, the gate work, 47-4. Best of 21, and that's sort of a flare that that this one can break running. Vicky Oliver, who historically, she and Phil historically are pretty successful at Keeneland, but she's winless at the meet, at least through I printed that this morning. So that I printed this race up this morning. So I take it that she didn't win anything yesterday. So I think that that's current.
Yeah, that is current. She's 0-16. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a concern. I just look at it, you know, that the reason why she's appealing is because she's double-digit odds. So, and I got one final horse. I wasn't on last week. 2 weeks ago, I got out with the winner on that last second play, 6-1. Today, in race number 5, horse, it's a real grab bag maiden race. Number 9, Belle Day, 8-1. First time starter by Spitzer, really off to a fast start with his runners. Norm Tassie, 8-1 Belle Day, 9 in the 5th race at Keeneland today, Steve.
There we go. There it is. The last second Friday push, LSFP. And who we playing football Sunday?
I'm on the Steelers. I really like the Steelers. I think football's follow patterns. We saw this last week from Green Bay. Tennessee's undefeated. They're still a really good team. But off of those back-to-back wins, the way they pulled out those wins, I just say, hey, they're heading for a loss. They're heading for an off day. They'll bounce back, but they're going to take their first loss. And that game's almost a pick. I love Pittsburgh on Sunday over Tennessee, Steve.
Well, and that brings to mind Steelers fan for life, who's in tomorrow in that nightcap allowance at Belmont as part of the showcase day. So, and it'll bring up Hammer, who's going to join us in a little bit. So I'm sure he's listening, and they may have named the horse after him. Leah Giamatti trained Steelers fan for life, who's winless, but it might actually, I think, is okay in that, maybe in that spot. We'll find out with Nick Tamaro, who's joining us shortly. And James, good luck this weekend. How was golf last week?
It was good, but walked away with it with a sore hip, a reminder that I'm in my early 50s and I hate getting old, Steve.
Well, and when you and Gigi have, you know, when you got to be picking up you know, babies, you better reserve yourself. You know, you don't want to have sciatica when you're toting around the Tatala.
All right, Steve. Well, hey, you have a great weekend. Thanks.
You too, buddy.
Breeder Scully. Talk to you later.
Absolutely. James _ Scully, 111. We've got to stay here. I knew we would never get the normal breaks in. And Nick Tamaro standing by. And Tam, 1215. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm just looking back to last weekend, and I guess there really wasn't... there wasn't really much that we, right, that we, what did we hit on last week? Anything? Oh, wait a minute. Yes. What am I talking about? I was thinking, because Scully wasn't on because he played golf. But you handed everybody Segoy and a chance for 6,200. How many times did you hit it, the cross country?
Right. Yeah, that was a tough leg, luckily. You know, I think it was probably easier for me to find Segoy than lead guitar. But that was just my own take on it. But we did, you know, it was obviously approachable if you had the price. And so, yeah, worked out well. You know, no 5 seconds of fame, though. We're on to a brand new week.
Well, and I, you know, I was really annoyed at myself for not even having the backup, because the other four were, you know, totally obvious. But I, what hurt was the scratch, the late scratch of the favorite, because I was kind of leaning on the favorite, and I knew, and then you know, it's not as if. Segoy, you know, got away with murder or anything either, because had every potential to get swamped, and yet was able to persevere to the wire, and of course did benefit from, who was it that was pocketed and couldn't get out, and might have changed the complexion of that race. There was a lot that went on in that event.
Yeah, it was a real kind of barnstormer after the scratch, which was no surprise given that Don't Blame Rocket was always going to be prominent, I would say, in the decision-making part of the race. But yeah, it worked out. I mean, luckily one of those situations where you didn't have to explain to whomever you were cashing with that it didn't unfold the way you expected. So lucky for those, and occasionally they go in our favor.
It was Busy Channel who somebody
right,
race
Larry
wrote
Rebelli's busy channel, sure. Yeah.
And somebody absolutely, I don't know if it was Santana on Apreciado or who it was, but absolutely race road just busy channel never got a chance to, you know, to challenge, and don't even get me started on Declan Cannon, who it's not like me to complain much about things like rides, but I did go on Derby Trail and say, does anybody actually cash a ticket with him? Because I can't.
He's remarkably bad. I'm probably a too frequently a critic of riders, but you know they run for purses that are funded with the money that I bet, and many other people do as well. So I can at least make comments. I don't believe in the "you've never done it, so you can't comment" thing. It's never stopped me in any other facet of my life before. If you hear me start making nutritional type comments, or you know even things like that, then you'll know I've gone off the rails. But yeah, he's really really bad. He looks bad on horseback. He makes bad decisions consistently. He's horrible on the dirt. And the race that you were referencing earlier in the week, we had both bet a Wayne Lucas horse that was breaking from the rail. And, you know, one of the things that you can grow to appreciate about top-class riders, and I always bring up Ramon Dominguez in this particular context, because Ramon never steadied a horse sharply. And it was because he was so cool in the saddle that even when things tightened up, he was able to do it and lose his momentum in such a muted type of fashion that it didn't affect his horse that badly. But you know, you see some of the lower ability jockeys that will just, you know, they'll pull this exaggerated, they'll stand up in the irons, they'll gather their horses in very quickly and lose all kinds of ground, and you know, at that point it's over. And that was a horse that had some run, so it's unfortunate. But yeah, it's when I mean, there was a good horse he rode a couple of years ago for Nacho Correas, whose name I can't remember right now. But she won a stake race at Arlington. I was there. She won the Modesty, and then she won a race at Tampa the following year to begin her Dona Bruja. And and he ended up riding her in the First Lady towards the end of, I guess that would have been 17. Yeah, I think it was 17, because then she won the race at Tampa, the Hillsborough, and came back and was the favorite in the Jenny Wiley that was won by Sister Charlie to kick off Sister Charlie's nearly undefeated campaign in 2018, where her only blemish was the New York, I believe, and Dona Bruja improved quite a bit when Jose Ortiz was in the irons. Not that Declan Cannon did a whole lot wrong with her early on, but his ride in the First Lady was pretty brutal, and you know, it figured that it was going to be an opportunity for him the following year, for her, rather.
Let's dive into the weekend, and we've got showcase action with the New York Breds. We've got, I think, a really difficult. I don't know if you bothered with the Woodbine 8th and the Monmouth 11th toward the cross country, but I don't know. It looks daunting.
Well, I did, and we're going to talk about it, and we're going to make a lot less daunting, because there's actually two of the races are off the turf. The Woodbine, it kicks off at Keeneland in a race that's going to be off the turf, so it'll be 5.5 furlongs on the dirt, and it's probably a more interesting dirt race, because you're going to have a favorite that you could really sink your teeth into betting against, but you're also going to have to use him. I think in a multi-race play, if you're playing the exactors or tries, you might try and beat him, and that's American Mandate, who is kind of a professional loser. He's 1-for-18 lifetime, 12 second and third place finishes, and two back was sort of the quintessential American Mandate performance, where he loomed boldly outside of Fast Getaway and then ended up not only not getting Fast Getaway but losing second as the 11-10 favorite. Now, the rail on August 22nd, there were probably only two or three days where there was a really pronounced track bias at Saratoga, and August 22nd was one of those days. The rail was very, very good. First Getaway was able to get away with a pretty soft pace along the inside and ended up holding on. An American Mandate was disadvantaged by that trip, but the other good thing I think he has going for him is that he can be effective from a little bit off the pace. I'm not altogether certain he wants to pass a lot of horses, which could be problematic. But there are real alternatives, which I thought was made it a little more interesting. Fast Pharaoh has run once on the dirt recently, going back to late in 2019. He debuted on the dirt. Don't really want to hold that against him. But went in the care of Jeff Bondi, this son of American Pharaoh, set a really strong pace going 6 furlongs at Los Al and ended up tiring a bit late to finish second. Now, that was on a sealed track, so there's an argument to be made that maybe he's a horse that just prefers, you know, sealed or racetracks or turf. But I thought it was a good enough effort to give him some consideration. I think similarly of Shared Legacy, who in limited opportunities on the dirt has actually fared okay. They've been, two of them have been on the slop, so you have to be slightly concerned there. But those are, I think, the best options as far as going against American Mandate, who's going to be a pretty heavy favorite. And I think, all things considered, is a pretty likely winner. Equal Justice is a horse who's fared well on the dirt as well in the past. I think there might be some reason to include him. And Mun Passage in one try on the dirt set a really hot pace before tiring late, but then was whisked off to the turf as soon as he made his three-year-old debut back in September at Arlington. So, of course, you're going to have to note the scratches and see where there are some adjustments to the field made once the surface change takes place. But I thought that those were the other options. I think the only turf race in the sequence is going to be Leg B, which is the seventh race at Woodbine.
But hold
seven
on.
And a half furlongs.
Nick, hold on a second.
Yes.
I don't think that... I've got Belmont ninth as the first leg.
Oh, really? Because I was looking at the...
You're looking at last week.
Well, they may have adjusted the pace. They may have adjusted the times. I have leg A, Keeneland race 7, leg B, Woodbine race 7, leg C, Belmont race 9, leg D, Belmont race 10. But the thing is, those races are all packed in close together. But was this before... I'm getting this right off the NIRA website. Was this before they adjusted the post times for Saturday? Hang on, let me refresh.
I'm staring at it.
Let me make sure my brain wasn't fried by the television program I was watching with two older white men talking over each other. Hang on a second.
I had that.
Okay, they did reorder it. Yes, and they actually changed one of the races, which I didn't realize. So and I'm guaranteeing you, I'm not losing my mind. This was Keeneland race 7 originally. I guess the adjustment was made when the surface change took place. So, everybody who's going to play the pick 4 or pick 5 has about a minute and a half of me rambling about a race that doesn't matter.
There's nice prices, though, in that sequence, and it is the start of the late pick 4 at Keeneland that
right.
you got two 2-year-old maiden races jammed in there that are a little crazy to have those in there. But anyway, use Nick's thoughts for prices in the 7th, and then Scully gave everybody the pick 3 anyway, although you're going to talk about the 9th in a minute. So let's dive into Belmont, because we're going to get short on time, too. Belmont 9th, the Iroquois, when these are the fillies and mares sprinting to start the sequence.
Yeah, this is probably the most interesting race on the entire card, and it's the most competitive, I would say, from top to bottom. You've got a couple of Linda Rice trainees who I think are pretty much the main two players, but a horse like Officer Hutchie, who's a former Linda Rice trainee, I thought was dangerous as well. There should be pace in here. I mean, we talk constantly about how this is, you know, a bit of a fool's errand and assuming there's going to be any kind of real pace in a race in New York, but I thought things were going to set up well for Prairie Fire, and I thought Prairie Fire, in facing a horse like Motivated Seller, who might be a grade 3 type of dirt sprinter at this point with only 2 starts under her belt, I thought that the form line there was pretty good for Prairie Fire, and I think she fits the, even though she in 2 tries with him at Saratoga, she didn't have a win, but I thought she fit Eric Cancel's style very well. I thought he's been riding a lot better at Belmont, so she's a one-run closing type that I think will be moving well late. I think Newly Minted is the horse to beat, having won the Union Avenue in pretty game fashion. Faced horses that day who really wanted to go longer, so I thought that the fact that she was able to outfoot them a little bit early certainly helped her chances. I don't think that the inside post is a particularly great result for her. And then obviously a horse that you're going to have to use in any kind of bet is Timely Tradition, who's just in very, very good form right now. 2 back, had a really brutal trip against Open Company, and then validated that showed that she could fit at that level with a win last time out, really drew favorably as well. So she made out kind of like a bandit there. And the Empire Classic is a, you know, brings together a lot of the horses that we see throughout the year. And the good thing about New York Breds as time has gone by is that they're more competitive against open company horses. And so we've seen a lot of these horses compete in graded stake races consistently, including Bankit, who I think now is probably doing what he appreciates the most, which is one turn. And I think the mile and an eighth is not a particularly big concern. I don't know about a mile and an eighth around one turn for him. I will say that there should be no doubt there's going to be pace in here with Mr. Buff and Seafoam signed up. I was very surprised to see Joel Rosario opt for Seafoam over Funny Guy. I don't know if that was an early commitment that had been made, but given the success that they had together, I would have assumed, and I would assume this is Joel's option because Johnny Velasquez gets on Funny Guy, and obviously both are represented by Ron Anderson. So with all that said, I know that it hasn't been as a successful Belmont meet as it was at Saratoga, but I really like Evaluator, and I'm referencing Jimmy Bond, who of course was over 30% at Saratoga, and things have not gone quite as well at Belmont, but Evaluator style fits the mile and an eighth around one turn very, very well. And I know that this is a trip where you can see horses back the pace down a little bit with that long, long, long run to the turn, but I think if you have that closing style that a horse like Evaluator does, it makes you dangerous. And he's a completely different animal from when he was 8-1 in this race a couple of years ago against Pat on the Back. So I think he fits well here, and I think he still has a great deal of potential off of a race where the margin was exaggerated by the sloppy track. He seems like the horse that's more of an up-and-coming type. I think you have to use Funny Guy, Bankit, and those would be my main two. I don't trust Mr. Buff outside of Aqueduct or in this kind of situation. Things didn't go well at Saratoga, and of course he was facing tougher company, but I'm a little unconvinced that he's quite at that level anymore.
I want to just mention one filly in that Iroquois. Well, I brought up Collegeville Girl earlier, and you know, she'll come from off the pace and does get Rosario. But Spin a Yarn kind of grabbed me, coming out of Finger Lakes for Chris Pronio and the Bromans and Carmouche. You know you're going to get a hustling ride, and she's going to be forwardly placed, and 8-1 and might go higher. I thought that Spin a Yarn had to be used in that Iroquois.
Well, I was rooting for her two back because there was a lot of conversation on the Saratoga Live show about her figure being too high from July 29th. So I thought she validated that. And I think she's a quality horse. I mean, I don't know necessarily if the trip is going to be hers, her ideal type of setup, but I hope that she's ridden very aggressively, as you're alluding to. I hope that it's just a run and gun approach, because that's going to be her best present her best chance to win.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, so let's swing back. Ron Gierking's going to join us next, and I am going to ask him for an opinion in that Woodbine eighth. But give us the Woodbine. We got Woodbine and Monmouth to include.
Well, I sure was ready for the Woodbine 7th, but that's been adjusted now. The 8th looked like a race where you had a number of horses that were going to try and come from a little bit off the pace, going 6 furlongs on the turf, and I thought you probably wanted somebody who I thought could be a little bit more aggressive early. I was all over Eye in the Sky 2 back when she was beaten by her stablemate at 11-1. Cutting back in distance that day was just a really, really disappointing loss, but came during a period of time where it felt like every bet I made lost, so it fit. Nantucket Red, I thought on the cutback, might be a little interesting. Going to be a prize. Was close to a hot pace last time. I didn't think got out of the gate all that cleanly. So you know, there's a horse that you can throw in that's going to offer some value. 6 furlongs never really seemed like it was going to be her trip, but she's going to offer value. I think she's a horse that you want to include, and I'm sure Ron will have a bit better insight. There's just not a whole heck of a lot going on because you don't know really who's going to end up on the lead. I think you have to use Eye in the Sky because of the class angle. And Helen Wild have obviously has shown speed in the past, and I think you just want somebody who's going to be forwardly placed. So they were the 2-3 finishers from a similar race on September 5th. I don't think it's going to be any surprise if they're right there in the frame again.
Monmouth, the 11th, and there's two stakes on the Monmouth card tomorrow, the Jersey Breds. You got the Dan Horn And we're Golden Brown back again for Pat McBurney. Also, how about Graham sending Mrs. De Tomaso's siblings, Irish Mias and Regally Irish? That's in the Dan Horn. But the Pinot Grigio, a handicap going 5.5 on the turf at Monmouth, assuming it's not too mushy in Oceanport.
Tomorrow, that was announced by somebody earlier on Twitter, and so the nightcap, which is the race in the sequence, the Pinot Grigio, is going to be off the turf, and it's going to be a race where we can all sing a Little Miss Moppet. So it works out really well because she is going to be probably 1-5, and I don't know. I don't really think there's anybody in here who can be competitive with her. She's clearly the fastest horse early on paper, and there is an MTO, but she's a horse who lost 2 back to Little Miss Moppet by over 11 lengths and then lost another race most recently. So this should be an easy one and a free spot.
Good.
And
good.
It, I believe, is the fourth leg. So if you can navigate the tricky Iroquois and the Woodbine Eighth, where you probably only need to be 2 or 3 deep, and then the Empire Classic, then here's going to be a single, and it'll take you to that Keeneland Ninth, where I heard James talking earlier about In Good Spirits. That, of course, followed Marcus, who thought In Good Spirits was kind of a single. I thought Wind Racer probably deserved a little consideration, too. I'm a big Jack Sisterson fan, as everybody who's listening has probably heard me say. So I thought that maybe there was a little bit of reason to include her. I don't know really how much beyond them you'd need to go. I bet Lucky Jingle last time. She got pace to run at. That was not the kind of turf course where you wanted to be trying to make up a significant amount of ground. But I really love Grand Motion off the layoff and not so much second off the layoff. So I don't know if she's going to improve by any measure, is probably going to need to. So we'll see. I think In Good Spirits probably has him right where she wants him.
Anything else before we wrap? Anything else from New York?
No, I mean, it's the Showcase Day card is good. It's competitive, as you'd expect. The